Okay, hello.
Hello.
Hello, Tess. How are you?
I'm all right, yeah. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm quite tired.
Same.
Yeah? You've got exams this week.
I do. I have many, many exams this week.
Too many exams. How many exams is too many exams?
I have three on one day. Yeah, and each exam's like 2 or 3 hours long, so that... I'm worried it's actually going to take me over the limit for the day.
You're going to have more exams than you have day.
Yeah. It's like 24 hours worth of exams.
It'll take you 8 hours to do a 3 hour exam. I mean, maybe it does.
It might do. Because I have extra time and I sometimes don't get them finished.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. So, it's the weather's awful, but we are plugging
it's not,
on.
It's not too bad today.
Yeah, it's all right.
It's been pretty bad the last couple of days, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's sort of harder to get outside a bit, isn't it? But you've managed.
I hang out with some of my friends. We went to like an inflatable water course.
That was
fun. Those two.
I pushed you in a lot.
You did push me in. It
That's
was fine.
I'm mean.
You're mean and a bad person.
I am. That's
anyway,
true.
Today.
Today we have Tane Piper.
Yes.
An interesting person. Scottish person, chap,
uh-huh.
Man. Person man who lives
man.
Who lives in the Netherlands and is very creative. A sort of kind of theme of creativity and ADHD and how he manages things and yeah, really good chat. And he was standing up throughout in a very ADHD kind of way.
I don't know what that means.
As in, he didn't sit down. He was moving.
I don't like standing up. It hurts my legs.
Yeah, I don't like it either. These people, even say, a standing
so why,
desk.
Why
really
is
good.
It an ADHD kind of thing?
Well, as in, it's more energetic. And he was moving quite a lot during the podcast recording. I really regret not getting a video of him, actually.
I didn't.
Not because I was like, here is a really fidgety person.
My hair was very bad on that day, so I'm glad we didn't.
Yeah, okay, I don't know. I can't remember. Can't remember.
You don't have any hair.
I don't have any hair. All right, so on with the interview, shall we go?
Yeah, on with the interview.
All right.
Enjoy.
Hello. We're very glad to be joined this morning by Tane Piper. Welcome, Tane.
Thank you.
Hello.
Tane, well, we had a little chat about what it is that you do. You're a software developer, creative technologist, and my favourite thing on your Twitter bio, inventive gardener. Which we'll have to explore in more detail later on and definitely not forget to do it like I normally do. So we're going to sort of explore your neurodiversity as we go along. We don't necessarily need to lead with it. So I think we're probably ready to just sort of crack on with the first question.
Well, the first question is very much about neurodiversity. So I don't know how we're supposed to not start with that because that's...
Well, no, as in... I mean, Tane, you could tell us how you identify in terms of your neurodiversity now, mm-hmm. or we can kind of get to it when you think it's relevant.
No, I think that it's a good question. It's something I think when you as an adult you get your ADHD diagnosis, you spend a lot of time thinking about the past and what. Having the diagnosis means in terms of, you know, how your life was lived. And then you kind of get to a point where you're like, okay, right, I can't wallow in the ADHD-ness anymore in some way. It's not to say that, you know, that's wrong for anyone to do. I think everyone has to go through their journey when they get their diagnosis. I don't have kids, so I don't have that part where a kid was diagnosed and then I find out.
Yeah.
This was more, it was actually my wife who, you know, at the time before we were married, she was, you know, she's also diagnosed ADD, inattentive.
Okay.
And when we were kind of beginning that journey together, she was kind of looking at stuff and like, yeah, this makes sense. And it was the same with me. It was like, this makes sense.
Okay.
You know, I find sometimes saying the word a bit hard, but it's like there's the genius side, but then there's the other side, which is like you feel like a failure. Your time management.
It's that paradox,
feel like you let people down. You got so stuck hyper focusing on something that you ended up missing delivering something, or you know, you miss an appointment, or you miss important things. You forget birthdays. It's these kind of annoying things that you kind of go through, I think, resolving as well. Mm. So when you ask where I am now, I just say I'm neurodivergent. And I've started to, I worked with a coach, both a career coach and an ADHD coach, for a couple of sessions, really, and just kind of going through what it is that to mean neurodivergent and what that means for me going forward in terms of, you know, my life, my career, and how I apply that. How can you sell the positives of being neurodivergent? Because there are a
Excellent.
lot.
That's a great starting point for our first question, Tess.
First question. Thinking about when you were growing up, when did you become aware of being different to other people, and how did that feel?
It's a difficult one to say when I became aware, but I always knew that I never really fitted in. You know, I grew up in a very kind of working class area in Scotland. A lot of people around my area went into, you know, things like dockyards or manufacturing. It was a very kind of like hands-on area. And then obviously, you know, you kind of typical story, industry started disappearing end of the 80s, beginning of the 90s. I went to high school. I was always in the computer room or in the library. You know, I had friends, but I, you know, wasn't the, you know, the popular kid at school for sure. I actually, you like you say, growing up, it's very funny. People say that you're not supposed to be able to remember things beyond a certain age, but I still have very vivid memories from very, very young, like 2, 3. And I can remember the first time I used a computer. I can and I was actually programming from a very young age. You know, I was able to actually do that stuff on a computer. And at the same time, there's another one from school. I've kind of told some of these stories before. It's like at school, you know, we would be given you know, primary one, we'd be given a bit of paper and asked to color in animals, and you're supposed to color in a cat ginger and a elephant gray and things like that. And I just took all the colors and I made them rainbows. And I got
As
in
you
shit for that. This is the thing. It's that I don't know if you want me to swear on your podcast,
Well, looks like we are.
but that's the thing is
I think a bit
that
of mild cussing is perfectly acceptable.
like a lot of my overriding memory of my childhood is having a very good childhood, but I was raised by a single mother, but I had very loving grandparents. My grandfather, you know, we'll talk about the gardening later, but my grandfather was a very big influence on me in terms of a father figure. I think they knew I wasn't the same as in every other kid. I had a computer from a very young age. But yeah, I was in a very mainstream school growing up. And yeah, just didn't quite fit in. Was always a bit too clever for other people. And this, in the way that it's like, unfortunately, adults, you know, teachers would be like, "Oh, you're too clever for your own good. You know, you're a troublemaker."
Yes, we've heard that.
There's a point where it kind of tips over where it's actually seen, or certainly growing up in the 80s when nobody knew about ADHD, and you know, when you grow up in a working class area, there's lots of bad kids and you know people who don't have opportunities. You know, there's a lot of, you know, drinking, drugs, and things like that around where I grew up, and I was very lucky to manage to avoid that.
So you weren't bracketed in with the bad kids. You
I
didn't.
didn't. I, you know, you kind of hung around with them occasionally. You know, we were a small town. You know, there's not that many people. But yeah, as I kind of grew older, I drifted away from them. And yeah, it's kind of funny. It's like I joked about this the other day because you know. The thing in the news at the moment about Bill Gates is not that great, but when I left school and in my yearbook, the person most likely to be the next Bill Gates, people thought that would be me. It's like that's people
You
thought
don't
that.
have to take all of his personalities on. That's
Yeah, I know, but at the
that
same time, you know, I didn't have a great school, but I think the funny thing is that now where I am in my life, I'm looking back on a lot of this stuff. I have been reflecting on a lot of it. It's all character building. Like where I am now, where I'm able to be, you know, much more adaptable. I think the way I look at the world, I'm actually, funnily enough, I'm doing a course later this month on systems thinking, but I've been doing a lot of reading and diving into the systems thinking idea. And for me, it's like this just makes sense. This is kind of natural. You kind of break the world down into smaller parts and you see how it affects each other. And it's like, it's very difficult as an ADHD person to describe how your brain works. It's the,
no, it is. But I think you've almost put it really well, because you described, you know, when presented with instructions to paint an elephant grey, you naturally paint it as a rainbow. And for you, me and Tess, that of course you do that.
Why would you ever not do that? Canvas and just do the most boring thing possible with it.
But also, we've read Elmer the Elephant quite a few times.
It would be less creative to leave the paper blank than to colour it in creatively. Because then you could pretend it was a statement about society or something.
As in, well, it would be more creative to leave it. I think at blank, the age of four, gray, though.
Yeah.
I think at the age of four, I wasn't making a societal statement, but I think
Tess, on the other hand, was constantly critiquing
the structural
nature of education from a kind of reception, really.
Yeah.
The other thing is we had a very open planned school in some ways, so because it was a new build. And you know, I used to walk into some of the older class bits sometimes and pick up a book, and I would look and I would be told, you can't read that. That's for older kids.
Yes, you're not clever enough.
It's so funny I can remember these.
I did not have that.
Yeah. It's so funny I can remember these going so far back. But I think that's the thing, that I've had a lot of that in my life, that I realised that I kind of got a break. Like, part of the finding out, I think, the neurodivergency thing is breaking out of the prison that it is, in some sense, when you don't know you have it.
Thing
that it kind of creates in your life, where you have very emotional and turbulent relationships with people, and you know, you don't understand why. You don't understand why, you know, when somebody cuts you off in a car, you swear so much in the car.
Yeah.
You know, once you realize that and you start to work with that, and that's another thing as well, is recently I switched my medication. I'm now on the longer acting Lisdex amphetamine.
Sure.
Yeah.
And it's actually been, that has been one of the most transformative things for me, amazingly. I didn't think it would be. Having had the previous medications, you kind of got to go through the motions of trying Ritalin, trying dexamphetamine, you know, because the Lisdex amphetamine is the most expensive one. And yeah, that actually has helped me with more of my emotional regulation, which I think has recently helped me slow down a little bit and take time to reflect on loss.
Yeah. Emotional regulation is one of those symptoms of ADHD that it should probably be one of the, you know, there's three big ones, obviously hyperactivity, impulsivity, and poor concentration. Emotional regulation probably should be number four, in my view.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I absolutely agree. I think I see a lot of angry people on the internet and things like that. And I think part of it is people don't realize that they're not controlling their emotions. And sure, some people should, like this cancel culture stuff, sure, some people should be canceled. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But there are some people out there who just, they don't realize that maybe they're, you know, by taking a little bit of time, finding out that actually it's part of a chemical imbalance and that there's help for it, then I think that's where we need to look at helping people. It's a mental health crisis in some way.
Mm.
You know, I think anger is a mental, like, emotional dysregulation, which can lead to anger, is a mental health crisis.
Is what you're saying that a lot of people are, yes. So there's lots to unpack in that statement, and I know we're sort of getting sidetracked, but I think it's really interesting because I think there's, is what you're saying that a lot of people are lashing out at people online and not realizing that their anger is in fact a mental health symptom that they need to address, rather than blaming the person that they're angry with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it may be that there is fault in the person that they're angry with, but I think you're right, people allow their anger to overtake them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's really fascinating about that as well is something I've always felt, is that we think of sadness and we think of worry as mental health symptoms, but we don't think of anger as a mental health symptom.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the problem with, I think, the way that people with ADHD or people with behavioral difficulties are treated in conventional mental health services is that they're not seen as a mental health problem. They're seen as a societal problem. They're mm-hmm. seen as a problem to be dealt with rather than a problem to be understood.
Yeah.
So I think it's really interesting that you bring that up, actually, because, but I would agree with you. I mean, I think So I think it's a really interesting way of approaching cancel culture, not in trying to police the boundaries of who shouldn't be cancelled, but to look at the emotional responses of the people involved.
Yeah,
this is that's a fascinating way of thinking of it.
This is part of systems thinking, and how I break it down is that you actually break down what is the problem. It's not the problem that people are angry. It's the problem that there's a lot of stuff going on. People's like, you know, you don't know what's going on in people's lives, and COVID's had, you know, has been a massive impact on the world and people and mental health and physical health and just how things are.
Yeah,
you know, I think we have to take a huge reflection on the last year.
Oh,
as a whole, I mean, you know, every individual can as well, but we need to start looking back on things have changed, and we need to start thinking more about taking care of people.
Yeah,
we do, and we do against the background of trying to recover in terms of the health service and in terms of education and in terms of the economy. Yeah. And that's a real challenge. It's going to be, I think the other day I was saying to someone, you know, medically, Delta variant or no Delta variant, I think in the UK at least, we are going to medically recover from COVID this summer. But societally, educationally, and in terms of mental health. Thank you. It's going to take a lot longer. Should we do our second question?
I think we should go
back to
Tane.
Yeah, I have a lot of conversations with people online, and they end up always going on and veering into tangents. I love it. That's me. I'm a chaos engine.
Tangents is a built-in feature, not a bug.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Go on then, Tess.
So what was your process towards understanding your difference once you realised, but then again, you did mention that it wasn't a realisation, it was you kind of always knew, but what was your process towards understanding that?
I think, yeah, again, it's kind of more reflection for me. It's understanding now what the impact of ADHD had on my life. You know, it's helped me in terms of my career. You know, I've had what we call a very spiky career. 20 years of programming. I've been at, you know, more than 10 companies. I've done a lot of freelance work. I've built a lot of things. And I think the neurodivergency, like to be able to creatively think, be able to kind of dive into these problems and understand them in how things connect, how things work. That's the side that's really kind of helped. But like I say, for me now, I realize things like my time management has been terrible, prioritization. So these are all the things now that I'm kind of looking back on that are like, these are the bits in my life I need to improve, along with, you know, coaching, medication, all these things that help ADHD.
So did you only start to realize, like, I mean, understand your difference a bit more deeply, like recently?
Yeah.
Or was there, okay.
So when were you diagnosed?
Just over 3 years ago, so yeah, 37.
Yeah, so 37.
I turned 40 this year.
Yeah. Oh.
So quite late. So quite a few years between those kind of early school years and getting your diagnosis.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of always joked, oh, I'm maybe a little bit ADHD, but yeah, until I actually had the diagnosis. Yeah.
Yes, I had that as well. I was like, oh yeah, I'm somewhat, you know, I'm a bit like that, ha ha ha. And then I was like,
you do work in ADHD.
Hang on,
let me just think about this a bit more deeply.
Yeah, that did happen.
And then you took a look at your lovely children and you went,
Yes, well, let's not go into that in too much detail. So should we go on to the third question?
Third question. That second one was a short one. How do you feel about your difference now? Because you mentioned that you only started to understand it recently. What impact does it have on your life, positive and negative?
So where I am now, I'm actually looking for a new role at the moment. And in doing that, I've kind of I've had new profile pictures taken, which are much softer, friendlier than the previous ones I had, which were much business-like. I've really been rewriting my, I suppose, my story a bit. Yeah, it's like, here's all the kind of the good stuff that I have done. That's part of it. And I think I realize now that I have a, so in tech, you have a, you have the pub quiz of the tech interview. I call it a pub quiz because you have to walk in with so much knowledge. And I think having done a few interviews, I've actually realized I don't really want to do the tech part anymore. I've got the tech part down. I've done that for 20 years. I think I've said, I mentioned people before. I think it's all about people. It's all about coaching and mentoring and helping them with what they need to do to do their work.
So it's people within systems in a way, isn't it? So you can combine that systems thinking with an understanding of people.
Exactly. It's kind of like, so I don't know, maybe some of your audience will know it, but in terms of like tech, you've got like startups, they build their cool new startup. You've got agencies who do things like, all the creative design, branding stuff. And then you have enterprise, which is your big companies that you're, that push everything out, or your banks or things like that. And I've worked in all of them. So I've learned a lot in
Yeah, you've been
doing
all
that.
around.
A lot of different management styles, lots of different tech stacks. And I've also met some very horrible people in that time and realized that I would never want to manage anyone in that way.
Yes,
So I
I've been
think
there.
doing that,
Yep.
that's the thing, is that you pick up the hard skills of the tech, but you also pick all, up all the soft skills, like how to manage stakeholders. I'm getting into like blue sky talk here now, but it's like managing stakeholders and customers and understanding business requirements and that kind of stuff. You only learn that, through doing the role. I think I've explained this before, and it's like where I grew up, like say you maybe go to the dockyard and you would be an apprentice, and then you would be an apprentice for like, oh, you wouldn't be an apprentice for 20 years, but you'd be the apprentice and you'd work there. And at the end of that 10 to 20 years, you've got enough knowledge that you can now run the floor, you can run the shop. And that's kind of the foreman, basically. That's where I kind of feel it's a comparison to,
And do you think your neurodivergence helps you in that role of people management? Do you think that it gives you a kind of leadership
It's
quality?
again, it's one of these very difficult ADHD traits to describe, but it's empathy. It's like being, you're able to be empathic with people and read people and understand people. And for me, I've kind of figured out a couple of things. I was reading, I only read the first chapter of this book my wife had, but it's called Motivation. And actually, just in reading that first chapter, it kind of clicked. It's about motivation for me as well, but for everyone else. What motivates people? What makes people happy? It's for me, that's if I can go into a job every day and do that, I'd love that.
I just wanted to also just tack back a little bit. You obviously had an early affinity for IT and an early affinity for computing, and I wondered if that was something that you hyper focused on. I don't know if that's something that you
Absolutely.
have,
So
and how that fits in with ADHD, time management, lack of focus on other things. It would be really interesting, I think, to talk about that a little bit.
Again, going back, it's like going back in the mists of time. When I was in primary three, I think, so I would be the age of four, six, seven. I scored 99 out of 100 on a music listening test where they played different musical tones. And I, because of that, I was given the violin.
Oh gosh.
Yep.
That's a punishment ever I
No,
saw.
but
Violence, difficult.
because I hyper focused so much on my computers, they took it away because I wasn't practicing, I wasn't doing it. And I don't know, but my mum used to do night shifts and things like that, and I don't think she really understood why I couldn't do it or what was going on. I don't know, why there was no more encouragement to do something like that.
But did you were you able to just focus for hours and hours and hours on computing
Oh,
and on
absolutely.
programming and so forth? And I think people find
I'm
that.
also playing playing video games, like games, ZX Spectrum, or when I had the Amiga, I used to play Frontier Elite 2, and I
Oh
would just get
yes,
lost
classic.
hours in that game, traveling around the galaxy. I think, do you know what it is? It's there was a discussion recently about how when Twitter came around, it's like people who are neurodivergent have started to focus on that kind of like dopamine hit you get from Twitter.
Yeah.
But previous to that, if you go back and you look in the childhood of these people, they would probably be reading a lot of books, spending a lot of time in the library, or spending a lot of time basically disassociating from the world around them because they didn't, you know, they were misunderstood or they didn't fit in quite well. So I think, yeah, it's, I think when you go back, yeah, I hyper-focused a lot on things like that. I kind of disassociate. I think it was disassociation now that I look back at it. I also want to like clarify here. I had a great childhood. I grew up in a really loving and comfortable household, but I think just nobody really understood what I was.
I think. Do you mean dissociation? Because dissociation from a mental health point of view can mean kind of not feeling, sort of dissociating from yourself. Also, almost feeling like you are not there. Mm-hmm. Is that what you mean, or do you mean an escape from the kind of humdrum life?
I think the escape from the part of the humdrum, really, in that just people around me, I didn't connect on the same level, I think.
And I think it confuses people sometimes because people with ADHD can't focus on things, some things, and can focus kind of unbelievably well on others.
Yeah.
And I suppose, would you say that that's because you found those things very extremely rewarding because they were that escape?
Possibly. I also, you know, was a daydreamer, in that sense that I knew I had quite an imaginative mind. So I think things like, you know, video games were a bit of an escape in terms of being able to maybe, and it's the same with books. I used to love choose your own adventure books. Especially not so much. I loved the Final Fantasy Eden Livingstone ones, but I actually preferred Joe Denver, Lone Wolf. I love that series. So if anyone out there listening knows the series,
remember that.
Yeah, it was much more like it was much more dark series, you know. But yeah, and there were stories with that, and you could join the fan club and all that kind of stuff. I would actually go in the library and I would sit there and I would just read these books, and I would go in and get the computing books, like the ones the Doran Kingsley, you know, like learn how to program space games or, you know, adventure games. And I would just sit there and program them. You know, that was quite a lot of my childhood.
I always struggled with those choose your own adventure books. I tried to get myself into them because, I mean, I am still in my childhood, I suppose you could say, but I do think myself quite imaginative, and I did used to really love reading books. And so I tried to get myself into these choose your own adventure books, but it just didn't work out for me because I had all these ideas in my head and I was like, okay, so I'm here in this alien place and I want to go down here and flip this rock over twice. And then the options would be like, kill the leader or like become the leader. And I'm like, that's not what I want to do. I had my specific ideas of what I wanted to do and they didn't give me that option.
Very constrained decision space, which is why we should be playing more tabletop role-playing games, which we do enjoy, but we just which we just never get round to, and we should get back to it.
Yeah.
Is this bribery?
No, it's not bribery. I'm just saying we had a good time doing it, and we just haven't done it for ages. We did it during lockdown, during the first lockdown, and we just haven't done it for ages. We should do more.
I'll get my nerd friends over, and we can play some Dungeons and Dragons.
But absolutely,
DM for you.
I agree with you, and I think that's why I say like Elite 2. I love No Man's Sky. I love these games that you can just kind of jump in and just do your own thing. You're not
sandboxing. No Man's Sky. We have it, don't we?
Maybe do.
Yeah, George bought it.
George bought it. Okay.
Yeah, so maybe I'll start playing that.
Oh, there you go then.
There we go.
Resolution.
Life changed.
I appear to have allowed you to make a resolution to play more video games.
Yes, let's go.
I'm quite sure how I've managed to get trapped into that particular one. Shall we move on to the fourth question for Tane?
Did you have anything else to say? Because I think I did cut you off a bit.
I think it's just kind of getting the positives for going forward and kind of leaving the negatives behind. I think I bring up a lot of the negatives, but you have to think about them and talk about them because if you don't, they'll just ruminate in here in the head.
And anyway, this is a mental health podcast, so if you didn't bring up the negative side of it, it would be a very different experience.
It's the seventh biggest mental health podcast in Singapore, Tess, I'll have you know.
It's Singapore now. All right, fourth question. We're
the big guns now.
Fourth question. Looking back, is there anything you wish had been different? Anything that you had done? Anything that other people had done? Maybe like getting the diagnosis earlier, because you said you only got it a couple of years ago. But yeah, anything you wish had been different?
No. I like to say I've kind of like resolved that.
It's a lovely
that. That's what I mean. But yeah, before that, yeah, I, you know, typical story of uni dropout. I wish I'd done university. Had a degree, because actually, yeah, when you are on a job search, you're always up against people who have got degrees.
Yeah.
And that's the difficulty of the self-taught part, is trying to get across that actually the self-taught part brings a lot of, I think, different type of knowledge and different type of work style. You know, it's then this kind of prescriptive,
in a sense, it makes you more creative and independent.
Well, possibly. I don't know, but I mean, I know plenty of people with degrees who are also, you know, and you know, like I say, my wife has ADD, but she has 3 masters, you know, so it, you know, you can do that.
A lot of masters.
Stuff.
That I have no concept of this, but I will assume it's a lot of masters.
It's not. It's not 3 Doctor Who villains.
No.
It's 3 master's degrees. Your usual first degree.
I know
would be...
what a master's degree is. I just have no concept of how much.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. Wow, that really is a lot of master's degrees.
But yeah, I mean, I can't think back to that, because nobody knew. Like I said, that like ADHD wasn't even really a thing until the 1990s, and you started hearing about Ritalin and all this kind of stuff, and it was always negative. And that's another thing I'm just going to slightly bring up that annoys me, is that the negative portrayal of ADHD sometimes. I don't know if Jane the Virgin, when the kid got diagnosed with ADHD in the last series, I was just like, wow, you're just treating this so badly.
Jane
the Virgin.
Back up. Jane the Virgin.
Is
that a television series?
It is, yes.
People listen, watch yes. on their television box.
It was one of these ones you kind of stick on Netflix and you're not really watching it. It's just
Jane the Virgin.
Noise.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, the way they kind of treat the kid at the end of that, I thought was not good. And it shows, you know, that there's still an uphill struggle to recognize that ADHD is a disability in some way.
Yeah.
But it's not, if it's treated correctly and helped correctly, it can, you know, you can help somebody flourish with it.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of stuff online. It's not like particularly negative. It's supposed to be nice. It's like a kind of neutral thing, but it's not even true.
Yeah.
And they portray ADHD as this kind of like, whoopsie, can't focus, haha. Like,
Modern Family. Maybe.
No, I'm talking about like social media at this point.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. Oh, like TikTok. Yeah. Oh, yeah. ADHD TikTok is fascinating.
There are some really interesting things, people talking about their own experiences. And then there's people who don't even have ADHD, or people who do have ADHD and are portraying it wrong because of their particular experience.
Yeah.
And they're like, ADHD means you can't focus and you get really happy when certain things happen. And I'm like, yeah, and what else? Come on.
Yeah.
And they're like, and that's it.
And there's a sort of jokey, you know, I've got ADHD. Oh, look, a squirrel.
Literally.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. And that's
untrue. They're not directly causing any harm. Mm-hmm. And I'm not like lashing out and attacking anyone. But
it's these
little things that can get under people's skin.
But it also annoys me that the autistic people, you know, people with ASD, are also portrayed as like cold and unemotional. And that is just like, no, you just don't understand that actually.
Autistic empathy is a very
different communication barrier in some way, and once you get past that communication barrier, it's a very different thing. It's one of the things that kind of annoys me is how neurodivergency is portrayed in the media, I think. And it doesn't help when, people are trying to get diagnoses or, as far as I understand, in the US, because it's the 50 states, they have different ways of treating ADHD, and some are more progressive and some are still
way behind. It's highly variable.
Understanding it, you know, it's, so even in a single country, you have a wide variation of treatment. But yeah, I think your original question, we've gone on the tangent, but your original question is, in the 80s and the 90s, there was no way of knowing. And where I grew up, there was just this assumption that you were a bad kid. So I've just let that go. Yeah, you
Yeah,
kind
I
of
think you
have
have
to.
to eventually, don't you?
Yeah. All right, so should we go on to our final question?
Final question.
So we've talked about what you wish had happened or lack thereof, what you wish had been different. But what are your hopes? So what do you hope will be different for other people in the future, or what do you hope will happen for you, or just anything like that? What are your hopes for the future?
I think for me personally, it's turning my neurodiversity into a positive, and finding a role that it fits and that people appreciate that difference and that difference in thinking. But yeah, I think just going back to that previous point, it's for everyone to have, stop treating. Oh, sorry. Yeah, let me find the words for this. The other day, I saw somebody kind of say this, and it's like, start treating people through the neurodiversity lens. Like, you don't know if somebody's neurodivergent. If you
That's
just
true, actually, yeah.
if you think somebody's an underperformer, maybe they're doing the wrong job. Maybe you need to find something different for them.
Yeah.
And I think
Same thing
that's
in schools.
yeah, and especially in schools, yeah. I think, yeah, we need to start looking at that in a different way, and that people need different, not every kid at school is going to be able to do standardized testing. You maybe need to find a different way for them to be able to do that. I
Yeah.
love standing in whiteboard. Your listeners won't see it, but I've got like magic whiteboard here because
Yeah.
it's my whiteboard, and I'm, I visually draw stuff, and I describe it as I do it, so yeah.
I think it's really
People describe
interesting.
things in different ways, and if you put everyone down a single standardized test way of doing things, yeah, people are going to fall off and struggle.
Yeah. Because I think this year academically has been very interesting because of the lack of external exams. I do wonder if it might actually be in some ways better for neurodiverse people, in as much as long as the teachers who are actually at the school understand them, they would be able to make some allowance. Although on the other hand, if the teachers in the school don't understand them, often they will do worse because ADHD people tend to do worse at coursework and kind of pull it out the bag at the last minute in exams, and that's
Oh
just
yeah,
how we roll.
all the time.
Oh no, I took
All
art.
no, never mind. Yeah.
I can tell you this now, at nearly 14, you still pull things out of the bag
Oh, at the last minute, of course.
moments before you're presenting.
Yeah.
I have that
Happened to me a few weeks ago.
in my outside of school drama class a lot, because we don't really learn our lines, and so like the practice before the show, the teacher's panicking because none of us know our lines. And then on the actual show, we
You're all
walk
brilliant.
out there and we all just absolutely like we know our
You nail
lines,
it. Yeah.
and we get into the characters, and it just goes, it tends, well, we've had a couple of slip ups, but
Yeah.
obviously
Yeah.
who hasn't? But
So that happened to
we just
me.
all
Well,
managed to pull it out of the bag at the last minute, so.
yeah. So last year I did a stand-up comedy course.
Oh, cool.
And
Nice.
it started, yeah, just around Christmas. So yeah, we kind of like 8 weeks, and as we were about to do our first show here in the Netherlands, there was a lockdown. So that was it. So I couldn't do my show. And then when the lockdown ended, we managed to do a show. I had to do it in front of 30 people. And it was all spaced out. It was a very odd situation for a stand-up comedy evening to be doing it in. But yeah, like you say, I nailed it when I did it. But everything up to that, leading the weeks before, when I'm panicking, like, I'm not funny, I can't find anything funny to talk about. You do that, and then you do the performance, and that 5 minutes, you're like, wow, did that just happen?
Yeah, like you start doing it, and then before you know it,
It's the adrenaline, but
feel
I
like you've
think
been doing it all your life, you know?
it's that's our one of the kind of abilities kicking in, and it's like you're in that kind of like moment where it's almost like time slows down, the adrenaline's kicking in, and your brain processes what's going on a little in a little bit different way. And it's just, yeah, you like it seems like it happened in a second, but you realize that you were able to focus for that 5 minutes and really do a good job. But it's very energy intensive as well, and I think that's what other
Oh,
people
hugely.
that's the thing that people don't understand as well, is that for neurodivergent people, when they're on, they're really on, but they then need to switch off.
Yeah,
That is
it's
true.
really true, actually. And the kind of neurotypical way of just trudging through your day, sort of 8 hours working steadily, I'm not sure it necessarily works. So I do a clinic. When I do my clinic work, I am very much on. I am firing on all cylinders when I'm seeing the patients, but I'm exhausted afterwards. And at the afternoon after a clinic, it's a real struggle to actually kind of do much work. I definitely need to have that downtime afterwards, and then maybe I can kind of pick myself up afterwards. But yeah, I mean, it's being as on it and as present as we can be is sapping of energy. And I think about that. I talk about that quite a lot when I talk about managing ADHD for children for in schools. It just requires, it's got a higher energy requirement to do the things. They can do everything that everyone else does, but it just requires much more energy. And there is a finite amount of mental energy that we all have, and kind of top it up in the
Burnout.
morning. Well, burnout's a bit different, because burnout's a bit more kind of like stress related, but it's just
Oh,
sort of,
it's not just stress
it's a
related.
depletion.
It's not just, yeah, it's that. It's because I have had stress related burnout previously, where it's like too much was going on. I had a lot of things going on in my life and work and everything. But then there's the other one, which is it almost feels like you're running on vapors.
Yes, I
It's
suppose
like,
there are.
I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. There's nothing to do. And that can also, it's like you start to like have no creativity, no vision. You don't understand what's going on. And that can also lead. So I think like neurotypicals could burn out mostly because of stress. But I think we have the danger of actually having other things that can burn us out. Like if you have a ASD, it could be your environment because it's too
Yeah, it's
stressful.
a very good point.
But that's the thing. I think we don't, yeah, we lump all these things into one big group, and we actually don't, we call it a spectrum, but we don't treat it like a spectrum.
That is true, actually. So, would you say one of your hopes for the future is we start treating it like a spectrum?
Yeah, and even and I even I would say with neurotypical people in it as well. It's like they're part of it as well. It's we're not, I think everyone has their differences, even when we look at the general population of people, and it doesn't seem like that, and then you've got your outliers, in the neurodivergent side. But I think, yeah, we just need to start treating people, I think, a bit more fairly, and that people could be on the spectrum.
Yeah,
We're okay with that.
I mean, to an extent, looking at some data yesterday, I mean, there isn't a clear cutoff of where typical ends and ADHD, for instance, or indeed autism, begins.
That's what the bell curve, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just
And
like p the amount of ADHD you have, which never really made sense to me, because in my mind, you either do or you don't.
no, exactly. But that the reality is that there is just a gradation. There isn't
I
a
think everything's a
it
spectrum,
isn't
honestly, if you think
yeah
about it.
well, not everything. I mean,
Many things.
lots of things, yes.
Lots of
I mean,
things.
like in the same way that intelligence
Oh, yeah.
is a spectrum in the same way, and there's no sort of clear cutoff. And the implications of that, you're right, Tane, is that for everyone who has a diagnosis, there are probably twice as many people who are just below the diagnostic category, just below whatever diagnostic cutoff we've arbitrarily placed, and who may need some adjustments to their life and to their working practices or to their school. So you're right, this kind of categorical approach has got really significant problems with it.
It's very much like BMI. The BMI
Ah,
scale
okay.
is old, outdated, and doesn't really reflect what modern like body shapes and things are.
Sure,
And there's a
sure.
very particular cutoff that's like you're obese. But actually, you would look at a person who's like cat who's categorized as obese, but you'd think like they're very svelte and normal looking.
Yeah,
I think
well, I
we
mean, I agree. I mean, my BMI is in the overweight category, but I can't really see where it's going to come off.
Yeah. I mean, you do a lot of cycling every day. It's not like you're.
Yeah,
It's not going to come off.
I walk, I like, oh, we never really got to the gardening. Yeah,
I walk. Oh, yay. There we
Yeah,
go.
I walk a lot with my dogs. I have two very active spaniels, which are perfect for ADHD people.
Yeah, I mean, if you have the word spaniels, you don't need to say very active. You just say, I have spaniels.
Yeah, they're great. But they get you out of the house. They're always enthusiastic. You know, that's a great dog breed to have for people who are a bit more hyperactive. But where was I going? Oh yeah, so yeah, I spent a lot of time in my garden as well. Like I said earlier, my granddad was kind of my father figure growing up. He supported a lot of the computer side, but he also taught me a lot about life and gardening. And I never really thought about it. And then a couple of years ago, when we kind of moved here, or maybe a year after we moved here, we found out that they have allotments here. They call them
Okay.
Volkstuin. A town is a garden in Dutch, is Volkstuin, people's garden. But I have an allotment, and I grow
Lovely.
tomatoes and peas and berries, and I build watering systems, and I'm looking at installing solar power and putting in a timed system for watering and everything, so I'm up there
Amazing.
all the time.
Pest is
That's
just
what I
having
mean, is like
Stardew Valley back flashbacks.
There's
It's not
the
Stardew Valley.
inventive gardener bit. It's like I don't just see it as gardening. I see it as a canvas. Like you said earlier, it's a blank canvas to go in and try woodwork and, come up with different ideas and try and get crop
I think I should be
fruits.
inspired by that and be more inventive in our garden.
Yeah.
Currently, it's just got a slide in it, a
No, it's got a slide, and
trampoline.
we've got our hammock,
We've got a
we've
hammock, that's
got
true.
and our lovely collection of weeds.
A lovely collection of weeds,
Yeah.
yes.
I mean,
Inventive
it's
weeds.
not too bad.
It's all
It's not
right. Yeah.
Thank you for that, Tess.
No.
Excellent, excellent analysis. And on that bombshell, I think we should probably leave it. We've covered most of the things that we
Man.
probably need to cover. And Tess has woken up sufficiently.
Have
Well done,
I?
Tess. It's
Are
early in the
you?
morning for somebody of
Hey,
your
I'm
age.
trying to get a lot of sleep. I'm gonna go to bed. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that. Tane, thank you very much for joining us. You have social medias. I think Twitter's one that you're quite active on, is that right?
I'm active, yeah. You can follow me if you want or not. I try occasionally say things. I'm not a thought leader, but thoughtful things, and try occasionally be funny, but yeah.
And your handle is, I can't remember
Just at
offhand.
Tane Piper, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Fair enough.
If yeah.
And people want to find you and hear your
People can find me,
thoughts.
yeah.
You're clearly a man with lots of thoughts.
Oh, way too
And
many. It's it can be exhausting to be me.
yes, quite exactly. We talk about the energy needing replenishing regularly. Absolutely right. And I think it's been fascinating talk. And thank you so much for joining us today. Tane
Thank you
Piper,
very
thank
much.
you very
It was a
much.
pleasure.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that was Tane.
That was Tane.
So I mean, basically, it's been a quiet week podcast-wise. We're sort of, again, slowly growing. We really need people who are listening and enjoying it to share and spread the word, because word of mouth is how we do it. We're not looking for interviewees at the moment. We've got pretty much all of the slots filled until summer, and I think we will be thinking over the summer about other options and things, and obviously, if people have strong feelings about what we should be doing, then we will do it.
Yeah, once again, do let us know.
Let us know feedback in all of the usual ways. Generally, Extra Brains Pod on all the
Yeah.
social media. That's
I
the
mean, we
easiest way
say
of
this at
finding
the
us.
end of all of our podcasts. If you're desperate to know, you'll be able to find it.
So yeah, have a good week, everyone. We'll try.
Yes.
We'll have a good week, I think.
Hopefully.
I'm gonna be busy.
Oh no, I probably won't have a good week. I've got my
No, you're gonna have
exams.
a rough week,
I'm gonna have a rough
but
week.
we'll be probably happier next weekend when we record again.
We'll see.
Okay. All
Okay.
right, see you. Bye bye.
See you.